Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast, your one-stop shop for all things competitive in the world of Warhammer 40,000. I'm your host, Eric, and with me is my co-host, Ray.
Hello.
And with us this week, we have a special guest with our show. You remember him from the 2018 Las Vegas Open, going up, making to the top eight with Blood Angels. And as a true son of Sanguinius, he repeated with going 4-0 on day one at the 2019 Las Vegas Open. Please welcome Mark Wright to the show.
How's it going?
Thanks for joining us, sir. So we just came back last week. We were talking all about the new stuff we expect to see at Adepticon via Games Workshop. And just first impressions, disappointed, happy, excited, what do we see?
For me, I was a little disappointed. I didn't see much 40K that would really change anything. So, I mean, with me being a son of Sanguinius, you know, there's not much in the pipeline for me. But all the AOS stuff looked pretty exciting.
What'd you think, Ray?
I was cautiously excited. I'm with Mark. I was a little disappointed that we didn't see anything as far as 40K goes, really. I mean, I thought they would have announced something, but it's just a kind of a, we're going to do more campaigns. But I was pretty excited that they're finally announcing Slaanesh Demons. It is an AOS release that they announced, but along with that, of course, it's going to go into 40K too. And I was really excited to see that new Keeper of Secrets.
Yeah, a lot of neat stuff coming out. So let's do a quick rundown in case you guys don't remember what was there. So yeah, a lot of Age of Sigmar, a whole new box set. I guess it moves the lore forward a little bit in the story. I know we don't have these in 40K, but those, I guess they're like spells that kind of stay on the table and they have like little markers for them. I got to find a way to use them in 40K for just, even if they're just objective markers, they look really cool. I figure it's working into a convert.
Yeah,
they look great. Yeah, it's working to a conversion or something. A couple new factions for Age of Sigmar. So like you said, I'm like, okay, then Underworlds, I didn't even know that was still around. And then Warcry, which is basically Sigmar's version of Kill Team. So I'm like, okay, somebody wake me up when this gets exciting. And there's a little bit snuck in there in the Warcry. There are Plastic Furies that have been re-released. They actually look pretty cool. I was actually surprised. So I like to see those ported over to 40K. I don't think we'll see any new rules, but they're kind of neat. And then they also introduced another type of critter type demon called a Raptorex. Raptorexes. It's about, looks like it's got a base of a motorcycle.
Right.
Or a bike base. Then kind of the long oval. And it's kind of like a really big razor wing from the Drukhari, where it's a weird-shaped bird with lots of spiky feathers on it.
Yeah, it actually kind of made me think of that one feathered dinosaur. I can't remember what it's called right now. But it was that first one, that first dinosaur that they that was discovered that that it actually had
feathers. My professor's going to shoot me for not knowing this. Apteropterix, I think its name was. Yeah, something like that.
Something like that. It's probably where they got part of the name from,
too. Probably. So the next thing they debuted was one of those things where something I didn't know I would want it, but definitely something I need, and it's something I've been crying about for years, and I just kind of forgot about it. It's a new version of Apocalypse. And before you go, oh, not again. They actually heard me and says the key thing what would make Apocalypse better than bringing... Because one thing I always thunk about Apocalypse is you know, come home on Sunday night, and my wife would be like, so how was the game? It was pretty good. We got four turns in. You guys started on Friday. How'd you only get four turns in? Well, there's 10,000 points on a side. So supposedly this game is so you can play Apocalypse style games, but get them done in a regular 2 to 3 hour session. So basically it's, as I was moaning and groaning, what happened to it? Titanicus and where's all the infantry and what. So basically they brought it to the 40K size models. So you're going to still play Space Marine or Epic, however you want to call it, depending how old you are. You're just not going to get new models. You're just going to play with your 40K models, which I think could Yeah.
Makes sense. That's what everyone wanted as far as Apocalypse. They just want to play a really big game with a bunch of friends on a table way too big and just have silly rules for big, big, you know, bring in their Warlord Titan that sits on their shelf for 2 years before they use it again. That's what people wanted. So now it's giving them an easier way to use that every once in a while.
So I'm pretty excited about that. So curious to see how they do it, what changes they make. And be kind of nice peek. That box set looks huge, though. That's the only thing I'm worried about is kind of a barrier entry. You know, get that Warlord off my Warlord Titan off my shelf. That $120 box. Well, maybe not. So we don't know prices on that yet. So we'll see what happens when it comes out. So Ray alluded to this as well. The future of Warhammer 40,000. Yeah, there'll be more campaign books. Stay tuned. That was it. I was like, oh.
Yeah, I was hoping they would at least give some. I mean, I was expecting them to say that there was going to be at least another campaign. I was hoping that they would at least, you know.
Yeah. I agree with you there. Location, you know? Or maybe just like a little silhouetted figure, and you're like, oh my gosh, this faction is going to be in it. You know, fantastic. Because, you know, there's a lot of, you know, we kind of joked before, if you're this such and such player, Vigilus may be really cool for Chaos players and for Orc players and Space Marine characters. But there's a lot of factions that just got left out. You're like, I would like to get in on the party. These new formation things look pretty cool. And didn't happen.
Yeah, I think it takes too long in between books because, yeah, they kind of want to let the meta settle a little bit before they start making more adjustments. But there's things that a lot of armies need now to where they can even get back to being competitive that they need to implement faster. And they need to stop worrying about just what new models to sell as far as the meta goes. You know, obviously their company, that's what they really want to do is sell models. So having these nice, beautiful, big models is great and all, but when it is all focused on one faction, you leave a majority of your player base out of all of this new stuff that's exciting and fun to use.
And it's funny because even a small rules tweak can then create sales of older models. You know, it doesn't take, you know, rocket genius to go, wow, why did Dark Reapers become so popular? Well, they're very competitive. You know, the quick change here and there, drop a points cost, and suddenly Primaris Marines are better, especially with the new Beta Bolter rules. So, anyway, another cryptic hint that was dropped off. It was a hilarious video, by the way. It's called 50 Shells of Grey, and spoofing off the famous movie. And supposedly, this is supposed to be, and I will quote here, soon we'll be adding something huge to our paint range that's going to make painting your models even simpler. Stay tuned for more teases soon. So the internet's been a glow of various theories, anything from a GW airbrush to a new line of paint colors that actually take longer to dry, so you can actually wet blend on the model much easier. I don't know. Wet blending to me and simpler just don't go together, but either way, that would still be a neat product. But do you guys have any ideas what that could possibly be other than a painting service?
I mean, it could be just colored spruce, like that way.
Really?
They did actually say that that's something it would
not. Oh, okay.
From what I heard.
Okay, because that, like, you know, Hey, Blood Angel models, red sprue. Hey, you're halfway done with your painting. All you got to do is, you know, do a little bit of shading, some wash, and you're there already and paint the base. Apart from that, I mean, I would have to say probably a GW airbrush would make sense because, you know, but then having probably a whole airbrush paint line, since they don't have that currently, that may be something that they were working on for a while.
Fingers crossed. As more comes up, we'll let you guys know. Of course, the Depcon being one of the mega events of the season, there were two event-only models, including a Primaris Lieutenant and a Primaris Librarian. Actually, I'm not sure if that was a Primaris Librarian. It's a Librarian of some kind. Neat. If you got your hands on one of those, I am jealous. For those of you in the United States, April 15th is not only Tax Day, but apparently also the date of the new GW Big Community Survey will go up. So if you've got something to say about GW, and it's a good time to say it and let them know they want the feedback. How much do they want your feedback? They're going to give away prizes. How about a whole new Sisters of Battle army? Meaning the new ones, the new plastic ones. They're going to give away an army if you are a lucky recipient. So I think that's kind of cool. Also, they're giving away...
And I think the fact that we're seeing Plastic Sisters proves that they are paying attention to what is, in, at the very least, in the server.
It seems that way. So we're curious to see as that falls through. There were a few more releases since Adepticon of what Plastic Sisters are going to look like. Again, I still haven't seen an actual figure, just a lot of 3D renders. So,
well, nowadays, that's how they do it.
Yes, but there's also a big difference when it gets on the table. But anyway, they do look really good. You know, the really huge improvement. So of course, they left the best for last, and as Ray alluded to, is the release of the new Slaanesh character. So Slaanesh is broken free in the world of Age of Sigmar. No word exactly what's going on in 40K for these characters, but definitely, you know, the big question was, were they going to get nerfed in terms of taking away some of the adult themes of Slaanesh to make them more kid-friendly? Some people thought they would make them more, you know, what would be the new direction, these new models. And I had to say, at first I was kind of, what is that? But the Keeper of Secrets is gradually growing on me, so I'm getting a little more excited about it. It's, when I first thought it looked like Jennifer Lopez from the movie The Cell. It just kind of... But now it does mix the bestiality with the feminine look and like that. But it's also kind of asexual a little bit. Is it a man? Is it a woman? It looks also a lot like King Xerxes from 300. It's kind of an interesting model. And apparently it comes with three different weapon loadouts, which are gradually shown in some of the previews. There's also a new character, which was an interesting concept. I don't think they quite nailed it. But it's a herald riding a demon prince. They travel as a pair.
And the memes are out in full force.
Yeah. So I guess for me, the problem was that the demon prince looks a little too human. And I don't know. It could have been a little more. It looks more like a Cirque du Soleil act than a Slaanesh thing. I don't know. Didn't quite get it. There is a new plastic mask, huge improvement over the last one. So very excited about that, to see that coming through. And the new model that they released is interesting. It's sort of a two demonettes holding up a large mirror, which could be a portal, could be some sort of reflection. Not really sure what it does. And they kind of hold up this mirror. It looks like it's probably on a 50 or 60 millimeter base. And... I don't know. The demonettes on the thing have kind of that whimsical look that we saw from the new Nurgle releases, which I was like, ew, I'm not a big fan of those. But the spear thing looks kind of cool. So curious to see what the rules are for that. And then, of course, the endless spells for Age of Sigmar, very Slaanesh-y as well, and they probably could worm their way into 40K with some clever conversion tactics. But beyond that, no other rules for 40K-wise, so I'm not really sure what these guys will bring to the table.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. They're beautiful models. So those Chaos guys who've been waiting forever to, you know, make a beautiful four Chaos God army, you know, you got your nice, you know, Tzeentch guys already painted up, you got your Khorne guys ready to just hack someone's face off, and now you got these beautiful Slaanesh models coming in. So you're going to see definitely some beautiful armies coming up with those. It'll be interesting to see how they actually play as far as competitive wise.
Absolutely. I mean, they're definitely, you know, Slaanesh as a whole is definitely making their mark in the new Chaos Space Marine stuff that released. I mean, they're talking about the new Obliterators, the new Havocs, you know, that's definitely making the rounds. But adding the demons to that would be pretty neat. I think a lot of people are kind of down on demonettes. I think their advance and charge and the number of attacks they get is actually quite competitive. But adding these extra support units could definitely put them top tier again. So just excited. Can't wait to see what all this comes out. So a lot still to watch for. So like I said, lots of teases this time, not so much real releases, but... So on that note, we'll take a quick break and we'll get back to the meat of Adepticon. That would be the Warhammer 40,000 Championships. We'll talk about those results right after the break.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint?
Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
All right, welcome back after the break. Quick review of Adepticon. They definitely march to the beat of their own drummer when it comes to both mission format and how they run their tournament. For those of you who are not familiar with it, we actually took the time to print off the packet. We'll give you a quick version. If you're an experienced player, just you know, put your flannel back on. It's 1996, and you're back in 5th edition. I don't think 5th edition was that old. But anyway, you get my point. Is the Adepticon mission packet looks like a throwback to old 5th edition style missions. So they did add, for example, some of the missions have Eternal War, which case you score objectives at the end of the game. And some of them are called Tide of Battle, in which case you collect objectives turn by turn. Interesting enough, if you hold them, you get 2 points, and contest, you get no points. Whereas if you take them away from your opponent, you get an additional point. They also still kept old school kill points, kind of the old Dova version, which is for every 100 points you kill, you get a point. So if you kill a 500 point unit, you get 5 kill points. They also have a new, well, new to me at least, new if you're used to ITC missions, a thing called Meat Grinder, and that's for every 3 wounds you inflict in a turn, you get a victory point. I thought that was interesting. And you can get no more than 3 in a single turn. They also wrapped back the tertiary, so those of you who remember the old school Nova missions, they had those as well. Linebreaker, Solo Blood, which is interesting. It's not restricted to turn 1, by the way. It says during the game, in a same battle round, destroy an enemy unit without your opponent scoring any destroyed units on you, which I thought was interesting. And Vanguard, at the beginning of your turn, after the first battle turn, if any of your units are entirely within your opponent's deployment zone, you get a point. One of the big myths I was surprised to be dispelled is that tabling is the way to win in Adepticon. Not the case. If you table an opponent, you only get 4 extra victory points. You still score the mission as normal. But one thing that's very different, at least to those who are more used to ITC, which most of our listeners are, is they still use a scoring differential, and ETC uses something similar. So the example they gave pretty much sums it up and explains why, when we go over the battle results, why so many players got a 40-0 victory. Which was like, how do you get 0 points? Did you show up? If you're used to ITC points, it's really unusual to score that low. So the way it works is every player comes into a game with 20 points, and then you play the mission, and whatever you, if you won by a certain margin, you add that to your score, and if you lost, you subtract it. So the example they give, let's say Mark and I are playing. Mark beats me 25 to 18, so Mark won by 7. Rather than scoring it as a 25 to 18 game, Mark had 20 points, he adds 7, so he gets 27 points. I had 20 points, lost by 7, subtract that. So I end up losing 27-13 on the score sheet. 7 points is, when we looked at some of these missions, is a very tight game. So obviously it's fictitious, because if I played Mark, I would have a much worse score. But the point is, when you see these guys who won 40-0, it wasn't like a complete tabling. They simply beat their opponent by 20 or more points in the overall standings. You can easily do that with some of these kill point missions, as well as holding a lot more objectives in the later stages. So it's interesting the way that breaks out. So the other thing that's was kind of adding to the ho-hum reception we got from Games Workshop's new release is, I was expecting to see the brand new meta, the first, you know, foray into post-LVO 2019 meta. Yeah, wasn't there. Same old list one. No real surprises here. So what happens is they take your scores from day one, the top first 4 games, break off the top 16, which then breaks off the top 8. Your top 4 looks something like this. Chris Blackham with Suriani, he ended up losing to Jem Vessel in his demon list in first round of the final 4. A gentleman by the name of Bilbo Baggins, I'm sure that's really his name. Interesting. If you were Bilbo Baggins as your pseudonym, what faction would you play?
Squats.
Yeah, it's squats. For some reason, he was playing bad boons. So I'm like, I don't know how those two relate. The halfling is playing orcs. So not really sure. Anyway, he played Steven 4 in the final four. And if those of you don't recognize him, that's Juice from the Long War podcast. Juice is foregone his Chaos Space Marines and some of his other listeners, Tyranids, for Gene Stealer Cult. He's playing that. And he was able to knock off Bilbo in the first round. I guess the Ring of Power was of no use to him with the Bad Moons. And that led off to Bilbo also knocking off Chris Blackham, so he maintained third place. And Jim Vessel, who we talked about last week's show with Skari, being up in from Canada, was able to knock off Stephen Ford to take the overall championship as number one player at the Adepticon Championships. So congratulations, Jim Vessel, in your demon list. So as I mentioned, what crazy demon list is this? Pretty much we've been seeing all along. A few large packs of bloodletters, a few large packs of horrors, and a few select demon princes. Pretty much the same thing. So no big changes there. But I am still holding out hope, because as promised by Games Workshop, what happens right after Adepticon?
Spring FAQ.
Spring FAQ. So Mark, being our guest, Ray and I talked about this a little bit last week. What FAQ items would you like to see next week?
I really just want my flyback so I can use most of my army. The problem that I have as a Blood Angel player mainly is that my characters are now just almost solely buff bots. Yes, they can still do a bunch of damage, but part of what made the Smash Captain so much fun for Blood Angels was you could just, you know, YOLO run him into, you know, a group of, you know, five squads of guys, but there's one vehicle in there. And that's, you know, the super powerful, either whether it be a Titan or a Fire Raptor or whatever it is that you want to really, really kill. And he can just go ham on that, smash it to bits, hope it blows up and does a ton of damage and makes this big, huge moment, which is a lot of fun to do. But now that I can't charge over, like my captain with the jump pack can't jump over, a 3-point grot to get in to kill the war boss behind him. That makes no sense lore-wise, and it also makes no sense game-wise as to why they would kill fly for charge. So I really wish that they would redact that portion where you can still use fly in the charge phase, so it lets my guys get to where they need to go in order to be viable. Because if they don't do that, especially with all the changes and all the improvements to shooting for every other army out there now, it really makes it hard for Blood Angels to do what they really want to do, which is run up and smack someone in the face really hard.
Now, well put. And there's quite a few other armies that definitely don't see that. And it's still, I don't know, the whole charge distance way it's being measured now, it's very, I wouldn't say counterintuitive. It just doesn't feel right. I think it's probably a better way to describe it.
Yeah, like the true distance, like, oh, I'm up on a hill, these grots are down here. They're technically 9 inches away in a straight line, but they would have to go 7 inches to get to the hill and then 2 inches up in order to get in base combat. But I can just, you know, draw a straight line and now it's a 6-inch charge. You're just like, that makes no sense. How are they hovering up there? Like, it makes sense if you have a jetpack and you can actually jump up and do that, or you're flying. That makes perfect sense. But as far as like a standard, you know, regular TAC Marine, he shouldn't be able to levitate up onto a hill or up into a building to fight someone.
So looking forward to the new FAQ. Hopefully, like I said, last time they pretty much waited to the last day of the month, which was pretty hilarious. But I don't think they call it the April FAQ. Like you said, it's the spring FAQ. So what's the first day of summer? Is that June 20th or something like that?
Yeah. They push it to the brink of spring, almost summer, as much as they can.
So I'll be curious to see what that's about. The other big news that kind of leaked out, interesting as well, and Ray and I were kind of talking about it, and then it showed up on the internet. If you look at the back cover of the White Dwarf, apparently Inari are getting a White Dwarf Codex in the next issue.
Like a full White Dwarf Codex, or just like a little bit of rules excerpts for the three characters?
It's not really clear, to be honest with you. It's just simply the Rise of the Inari. Okay. So, and it has a picture of them. We're like, oh, what does that mean? So some people think it's a full-blown codex. Some people think it's a kind of a rules update. Others is thinking it's just a new painting tutorial for Dean Karn.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. Yennari needs some fixing. They're still super powerful, regardless of which way you build them. So I'd like to see them toned down a little bit. Other than that, I mean, I'm excited to see what they do with it.
I am too. I think the, you know, just the mishmash of Eldari, Harlequin, Craft World, it's still a little confusing. If they're all in one book, hey, this is what they can take. I know it'd be a truckload of data slates, but hey, you did it for Gene Stealer Cult, you can do it for these guys. And I think the other thing too is it would be really cool. I don't know if there's another new model lying around somewhere, but some unique Yunari models. I think that'd be kind of neat. And not sure what they
give them a troop choice
or even elite choice. That's the idea, is that, or like maybe some sort of like sergeant, because that's one thing I was frustrated about with playing Yunari, is that you have to make one of those three characters your warlord. So it's like, okay, Cat Lady's pretty useful. I'm still trying to figure out what to do with the Vizark. And the Incarn is really cool, but it becomes, you know, it's a 340 point commitment. It'd be great if you had like some sort of like, I don't know, Autark in our, you know, an Ari Autark that just kind of fits the role, and a little cheaper option unlocks the strength, power from pain, not power from pain, strength from death. And so you don't have to use the character, because otherwise those characters are really getting around the universe really quickly. So. Also, things to find out. By the time you're listening to this podcast, by the time it's actually released, you may or may not have some new rules in the ITC. And one of those might be how you declare yourself as what faction. So one of the most popular awards to go after in the ITC is, of course, best in faction. So that way you're kind of the tops among your peers. So if you decide I'm going to be the, you know, I'm taking the underprivileged, underpowered codex, well, at least I'm going to be the best of all the other people who made that same choice. It's kind of one of those things that really is inspiring people to, you know, show their true colors for the faction they have a real commitment to. So what does it mean to be true to your faction? And that has been one of those debates that's been raging all over the internet. So before we open this up any further, guys, what are your thoughts on what is true to your faction?
Personally, I've been pretty open about the idea of what it would mean to be best of faction. But as it stands, as of right now, or at least as of yesterday, you only had to have the majority of all of the your entire army be one faction. So, you know, in 2,000 points, if you got three detachments, you'd only technically need to have maybe 700 points in an army. I would argue, how does having 700 points of an army make you the best of any faction?
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that one there. For the most part, for myself, I know that I used to play purely Blood Angels and nothing else. That was the faction that I really loved and I enjoyed. And I, you know, I got all my models, I got them all painted up. I got a beautiful army that I love and everything like that. And it's, for me, when I did the LVO run in 2018, I was playing pure Blood Angels, but I went in there without a thought in my mind of even trying to reach top eight. I was just going to be happy getting 3-3, but all the stars aligned. The rules weren't, you know, slanted against me at that time. We still had turn one deep strike. We still had, you know, fly charges that worked. So I had the advantages with my Blood Angels army of being mostly fly, you know, models on the board, being able to take advantage of those things. And with everything lining up the right way for me and getting the right matchups all the way through to get to the top eight, I ended up doing really well, which surprised not only myself, but a lot of other people. So for that, I would say I like the idea of it, because it promotes people thinking outside the box and not just min-maxing on everything and anything. try to get rid of that, heroic 32 from every Imperium army just because it gives you 5 command points. Try to get rid of having a Castellan in every Imperium list or some other kind of Titan and really try to promote some, different army thoughts and how things work. I like the idea of it. The problem is you're going to run into, in these big tournaments, you're going to run into essentially like 2 tiers of players. You're going to run into the people who are there to win the tournament, and then you're going to run into the people who are there just to win best of faction. And unfortunately, for most cases, when you're talking Imperium or Eldari or Chaos, they're not going to be able to do both, because the best way to build those is with a mix of those, major keywords.
And it's definitely I think the tier system, you're going to see some separation from there, and it becomes kind of difficult.
Yeah.
And the good news is no one's saying you can't bring your mixed army. So if you've already got an army that is 3 detachments of 3 factions, it'll still be playable and you're still going to be able to compete and there's going to be no penalty. It just, you may get lumped into when you look at best of faction, you're not going to be where you thought you were. I think it's going to be probably set Imperium, Chaos, or Eldari being the big 3. And honestly, if you're an Orc player or a Chaos player or a Tau player, you're like, yeah, welcome to the party. We've been doing this since day one. But I can tell you, me as myself, currently, I've been playing Drakkari for quite some time. I have just under 300 points of Craft World. And knowing that's going to disqualify me from best in Drakkari is very frustrating to me. And it really is a central part of my list. And it's only 3 models, which makes it even worse. But it's what really makes the list hum. And I'm trying to think of, okay, what is the Drakkari equivalent so I can maintain my best of Drakkari? It ain't there. It's just an element that's not available really in the codex. So we have to think of a whole new strategy moving forward if this comes to true. We could all be talking about a moot point, and it goes back to being, whatever the biggest faction is, a biggest attachment is your faction.
Yeah, I would like to see personally still be able to take a mix of things, but make it so that for you to qualify as your major faction, to either be at like 1500 points or 1250 points out of 2000. I think that would be a good number where you could take other things. If it's at 1250, it doesn't disqualify every Astra Militarum player from taking a Castellan if they really want to. And then it also allows you to have some variance as far as what you want to bring. If it's at the 1500, then you're really limiting people to mostly one faction and maybe a little bit of others. You'll still have the heroic 32, because that's like all of 130 points for, 32 models for 5 command points. So you'll still have that in most Imperium lists, but it would force you to have a more dynamic range of what is the main army in there, to really help out with, making it look and feel more aesthetically like the army that you're trying to represent.
I guess for me, it's not so much the notion one way or the other. It's the way this has been brought up by the internet community. It feels a lot like this. Isn't this how Prohibition got started? Where a vocal minority basically started shaming the rest of the community and saying, what you're doing is wrong. And people like, as well, I'm doing this to win. It says, well, there's more to the game than winning. Well, I guess so. Because part of me is like, if you really, what is it about taking allies is so bad? Now I get, yes, the loyal 32 and a Castellan plus insert Space Marine chapter of choice. I'm tired of playing it, but it's still a good list, and really there's other ways to change it by sweeping it under the rug that you can't ally them together. I think the Castellan could probably use a points increase here or there, but
I think what we're going to see in the end is not it's not going to be anything like pushing the those people who play with multiple armies and they're within within their overall army. It's just going to, we're going to see new people get those awards. You know, a lot of times when you look at the top 10 at the time of, you know, an LVO, you're pretty much looking at, to a degree, the best of factions too. This year, you know, instituting a change like that, this year, we, and in future years, as long as they keep doing it, you would see, it would be something interesting. You know, it's, I hate to call it a participation trophy because it's not what it's going to be. It's going to be, these are the people who are dedicating themselves to take one single codex and maximize it without reaching out into other codexes. And in a way, don't those people deserve recognition? What better way to say, to recognize someone who's doing as the best possible and sticking to just one codex than calling them best in faction?
Well, I mean, you have different things, because if you're talking lore-wise, it makes perfect sense that a Blood Angel player would have a smaller number of Blood Angel units compared to the number of Astra Militarum units that are taking up the front lines. And then if it's a big battle, then it's going to have a Titan backing it up. So as far as like the lore wise, it makes perfect sense to have a mixed Imperium army. So those that are beating that lore drum, like it doesn't make sense for them to use multiple armies. They're not actually paying attention to what's going on lore wise. As far as game wise, like I do understand and I like the idea of rewarding people who are playing pure armies, but don't make it an ultimatum to people who are trying to represent the same army, but actually try to win the tournaments, like actually trying to be the best that they possibly can be. So they're taking these things, and it's getting to a point where you kind of have to separate the people who are there because of the hobby and people who are there because they want to win. And, you know, the hobby is getting to a point where there's actually money being invested in some places where, you know, GW is actually paying people to broadcast during tournaments, to have these professional announcers come in and talk about the game and talk about things to make it more entertaining, to give it to a point where they can, you know, potentially make it something that is a sport of sorts, you know, a tabletop gaming sport. And at that point, you have to get rid of the fact that there's lore people who are just there for the hobby, who really like their models and like the story and have been around for 20 plus years, and they really still like the game, so they just go to those tournaments. And you're going to see a big separation between the people who want to win at all costs. So, I mean, not necessarily the whack players where they'll do anything and everything to win, but the people who build a list to win the tournament, expecting to see other mixed lists and everything like that. And then you'll see the people at the bottom of the bracket be the ones who are taking their fluffy list and taking the ones that are, you know, pure of anything that doesn't have a benefit to being pure. If, you know, if this was GW's intent to make pure armies a thing, then they would give you a bigger benefit for taking a pure army. Like, hey, if you take one codex, you get an extra 3 command points for taking one codex. You know, something that's a little bit of a bump that may push people towards that, but it's not too much of a bump that it breaks the game.
It's funny you mention that, because that's actually what GW did in an older version of Blood Bowl. They introduced it an ally system, and very much like 6th edition, where, you know, it's complex grid type thing. A long story short was, in Blood Bowl, they use rerolls. There's a precursor to command points that we see now. And so for every player you took that was outside your, you know, that you allied in, you lost a reroll. And the rerolls are supposed to be kind of representing your coaching ability. So the idea is that you had, you know, players not getting along or trying to teach two factions one philosophy of playing, it made you less cohesive as a team. So the idea that the max you could do, so if you brought in like a third faction to your army, now you're at a -2. It's pretty crippling, because the most you could do is 8. Most players had about 6 of those points. You went from 6 to 4. You're talking about a 20% drop in your command points, and just because you brought in extra models. And it was a big deal, because there was a huge upside to that for, you know, you could bring some, you know, power players to a very speed-oriented team, and likewise speed to a power team. not on much different as we see 40K now. You know, that's something where maybe that's what we need to do is, they said, reward the players. If you're, if you're mono faction, all three detachments are the same codex, you get extra command points, if that was intended, or vice versa. If every one you bring in that's outside this particular keyword, it's, you lose, you're no longer battle for it, so you lose the three command points to start with. Maybe that's the way to go. I mean, the long and short of it is, whatever you've been playing with today, you're still going to be able to play with it tomorrow, regardless how the vote goes. These aren't armies that are getting banned. This isn't a anti-soup thing. And it's just simply where you will fall in terms of which faction you're playing for best of faction. And to, I think the point both you guys made a really good job of saying is, you know, you're going to have to make a choice. Do I really want best of faction, or do I just want to be competitive in the overall setting? And build your army accordingly. So we'll look to Frontline Gaming for the next 48 hours to see if any major announcements come up with that particular vote. In the meantime, we will take a break, and when we come back, we'll go over your ITC top 10, as well as upcoming ITC events around the world. Be back in a minute. Welcome back after the break. It's now time for your ITC top 10 as we record tonight on April Fool's Day. So no jokes here. Were you guys the victim of any pranks today?
I was not, no. Apart from my job. My job is always a prank with what I have to do on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. Today was a particularly bad Monday for my job as well, and I kept saying to myself, this is all an April Fool's joke, right? This is all going to go away? And no. No, it was real. So, anyway. So your ITC top 10, all joking aside, we start off at number 10. Richard Kozar jumps to the top 10 for the first time all year at 589 points. Ninth place, Derek Simon, with a mere 8-point lead over him. Eighth place, Ivan Cho jumps into there with a less than 1-point lead over Derek Simon. Scott Horace jumps into seventh place, followed by Shane Watts in sixth. Andrew Ford holds down the fifth spot. Richard Siegler holds down the fourth spot. Raymond Almuda holds down the third spot. John Lennon is knocked off the top of the list to make room for your new number one, who's none other than Daniel Hesters, coming in first place with a sizable lead of 714 points. So about 13-point lead over second place John Lennon, and easily, let's do a quick math here, 123-point lead over 10th place Richard Kozart. So there you go. Here's your ITC top 10. Ray, what events do we have going on next week?
All right. This next weekend, we've got the Cutthroat GT in Westminster, Colorado.
Already? That's awesome. Cool.
The Kempenfelt Open in Barrie, Ontario. The Spring Hull GT in Hull, England. The Into the Hellstorm 2 1750 Warhammer 40K ITC event in Sutton in Ashfield, England. RatCon in Ballarat East, Victoria, in Australia. And then it looks like we've got... Oh, where is it? Oh, it's a team tournament. Never mind. All right. That looks to be it.
All right. So that is our show for this week. Any other comments or your opinions on what mono faction versus soup? Leave it up on our Facebook page, plus your thoughts on all the new releases, including coming to order this week, some new Chaos goodies that were previously previewed. They're available for pre-order this coming week. Also, leave us a review on iTunes as well as Spotify. We can find our podcast there. In the meantime, Mark, thank you so much for joining us this week.
Yeah, you guys are welcome. Glad you could have me on.
Absolutely. And so for the Exterminatus podcast, my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
And thank you for listening.